The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't it an angel?
Satan.
Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
On the official opening of the Christmas shopping season here in historic downtown Shelbyville, welcome. I'm Derek Gilbert.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not shout. This is Sharon Gilbert. Welcome to the bunker, everybody.
It is, we were out doing a little shopping this afternoon and discovered
not,
the shelves already stocked with Christmas displays.
Well, as I told you as we were shopping, that happened last year and the year before, and I think pretty soon we're going to see it out there, you know, the 4th of July.
Well, anyway, we pay no attention to that. Just as
we
invite you to pay no attention to us as we stand behind the curtain here, welcome to the new Bunker Mezzanine Annex, and thank you for listening, inviting us into your MP3 player, computer, or wherever you're listening to us at the moment.
We're in the little box talking to you right now.
Yes, into the cans. Sort of picking up on a theme that we left off yesterday as we talked about science and how
we left off
things
we didn't
developing.
Complete something yesterday.
Wow. Yeah, this new 30-minute format allows us so much time and no more, but it does give us more opportunities per week to pick up those spares.
Yeah, by the way, if you hear a little bit of crackle in the background, it's this bad mic cord. We've ordered one, hasn't come in yet, so We'll get it. We'll get it fixed.
Yeah, as we try to improve the audio quality here to make up for the the fact that this is pre-recorded.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up because I want to ask one little thing. We need a little feedback from all of you.
Mm-hmm.
Derek and I were talking last night as he was uploading the show that we did last night, and you had put it up at what 32 bits.
32 kilobits per second and
32 bits would be pretty bad.
Yeah, it would. 32 kilobits per second, 22.05 kilohertz, which is about FM radio quality.
Well, the reason I'm asking is we were talking about the file size being – I'm a little hot. I'm way back on the mic. We're talking about the file size. Thank you. Talking about the file size being pretty small compared to what it would have been a few years ago, and that most people no longer are on dial-up, that you probably are listening to this and you've got broadband access somewhere. And so it wouldn't hurt us to – and we also have more
– bandwidth.
More bandwidth and
right.
more storage now.
Right.
So it's not like we were in the past where we were really, really cramped and we couldn't fit a whole lot of big files in there. What I'm asking is – how many people would prefer a 64 kilobit?
Or 128, or going to stereo so you can hear the theme music and the Steve Grace song in stereo. Because
yeah.
I've been compressing it to mono, which is what brings it down to 32 kilobits per second.
Mono, the hands of fate.
Yes. if it were stereo, it'd be 64 kilobits per second. But we could go to 128 and 40, but of course that would make the file size like four times as large.
Yeah,
so,
right now it's about 7 megabytes, so
right.
it'd make it closer to 30.
Right. But when we did this 5 years ago, we had a limit on the bandwidth.
A very stringent limit.
Right. And once you hit that limit, basically your account was shut off.
Yeah.
So we almost overran the limit. I remember thinking, how excited we were when we first started doing the podcast. And we got 5 downloads. Isn't that great? And then, a couple of months in, we suddenly noticed that, whoa, hey, we're at, I forget what the limit was. We were at so many gigahertz or gigabytes of transfer, and we were about ready to overrun our limit. And
they shut down a couple of our sites, and we're like, why'd you lock our sites down?
Yeah. And the frustrating thing, well, I won't go into a long story, but
anyway, we have no limits now.
So
if you would like to have a better quality show, if you're burning it to a disc or something like that, or you just prefer that it sound a little bit better,
yeah,
let us know.
And we can put the stereo sound and the bigger file up there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little slower download, but as you point out, 5 years ago, A lot of people were still on dial-up, and most folks these days have broadband.
So. Well, you know what? Honestly, making it 64, what makes it, 14, 15 megabyte download, and it would be better quality. Yeah. So, you know, that's a nice moderate option.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. The other thing we ran into in the past, too, is when we tried other tricks to compress the size down, like using variable bitrate. Yeah, getting pretty geeky here.
That didn't work.
No, because 5 years ago, not all MP3 players could handle that. So anyway, technology's caught up to us.
It has.
So yeah,
so, I run pretty fast.
our next move is to upload our personas into the Borg. Yeah,
you know, that reminds me. I've got to say this before we get too much into the politics of the day. I watched The Surrogate last night.
Oh, Surrogates with
the
Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Yes. It's really good.
Yeah, that was recommended to us by Paul and Philip Collins.
I know, it was, and I finally got around to watching it. You know what? That movie is really, really good. It reminds me of iRobot a little bit. It's all about the stuff that we talked about in Canton, Ohio, this merging of human intelligence with a robotic construct.
Right.
And in I won't give away the plot, but in The Surrogates, essentially, that's what's going on. You lie in your little bed, you're hooked into your robot, and your robot is the one roaming around.
Which is the next step of a lot of these MMORPGs that kids are playing these days.
Mm-hmm.
You will have some big arena with guys and, you know, robots in full battle dress trying to blow each other up while kids sit in chairs with, VR goggles, VR headsets on.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that's going on also in Caprica. They don't have robotic entities doing the work for them. They have avatars.
Mm-hmm.
So it is all virtual.
The next war may be fought between avatars on both sides.
Well, that's what's going on in The Surrogates. I won't give any more away, so watch The Surrogates.
Well, but it's not all that different from what we're doing inside Pakistan and Afghanistan with the drones, the Predator and the Reaper drones. You know, some guy at NSA or CIA headquarters operating a joystick. It's a big video game.
Exactly, and that's why when you and I talk about the software that is only accurate to 13 meters either way.
Yeah.
Well, that's not too great. Pakistan, by the way, is still pretty cheesed.
Yeah, they've still got those critical passes blocked between Pakistan and Afghanistan, which has shut off a flow of supplies, a critical flow of supplies from NATO forces operating inside Afghanistan. And Debka file gets into some pretty... It gets into detail about the political situation on the ground. Essentially, politicians in Pakistan gritted their teeth and tolerated the drone strikes and the missile strikes inside their territory until we started using the Apaches and getting a little more precise about who we were hitting and when. The Apaches pack a lot more firepower than the Predators.
Mm-hmm.
And when they knocked out a Taliban cell of, and I forget the name of the militia, and because it's named for its leader, it's a Haqqani, I believe, Haqqani or Haqqari, one or the other. When that happened, this particular militia group is apparently very well connected with the ISI, which is Pakistan's intelligence service, which is sympathetic to and loyal to the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
When that happened, that's when Pakistan said, okay, enough is enough. Enough is enough. And so far now, 70 fuel tanker trucks have been set on fire since last week, Wednesday. Only three dead. I guess it's easy to say only three when it's not, you know, us or someone we know. But I guess relative to the physical damage that's taken place, the loss of life has been relatively minor. I feel... kind of even saying it that way, you know, relatively minor.
But that's the problem. I mean, when you...
We get so deadened.
We do. Numb. We really do. Yeah. And that's the whole purpose of it, isn't
right.
it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That we don't think about, especially if you're the one who has to press the button.
Yes, exactly right. So it remains to be seen when that is going to reopen. But... And there may be things happening behind the scenes that will reopen these supply lines. Because as we know from reporting in The Nation and other and elsewhere, the United States government is paying out tens of millions of dollars to the Taliban to keep these convoys safe. We are effectively paying protection money to the Taliban to keep these supply lines open, not just the NATO supply trucks coming across the border from Pakistan, but supply trucks inside Afghanistan between Kandahar and Kabul, and our forward operating bases.
You know, again, I would say if you have not seen the movie Syriana,
yeah,
it is essential to understanding what's really going on over there.
Yeah, a fictionalized account, but based on the writings of a former CIA operative named Robert Baer, B-A-E-R. And, yeah, a lot of truth, it appears, because the things that happen over there make a lot more sense if you assume that the worldview presented in Syriana is correct and accurate. So, but yeah, a lot of weird things happening over there, and it may just be that they're holding out for more money. And if we pay a few more million under the table to the Taliban, they'll open up that checkpoint to get in, to bring the fuel trucks in from Pakistan.
You know, there's another strange story over there. It's in India. There's an athletic event taking place over in India right now, and a lot of the swimmers from it's the Commonwealth Games, and a lot of the swimmers over there from Britain. Don't know if it's just Britain, but it says here. Tests have been carried out on the Commonwealth Games swimming pools in Delhi after a number of athletes were struck down with a stomach virus. About 20% of the England swimming squad are suffering from the bug, and up to 20 swimmers from England and Australian teams have fallen ill, and it's thought that the quality of water at the aquatic center could be to blame.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, the reason I bring this up is because India is, well, it's in all of the articles that I've read, India is essentially the, excuse me, the source of the superbug that is now going throughout Europe, and it essentially people who go to India for a vacation.
Oh, medical vacations.
Medical vacations, thank you very much. Go over there for a transplant or something like that, are coming back with a bug that is resistant to all known antibiotics. And there have been three cases so far in the United States. And I'm wondering, one of the first symptoms of this bug is diarrhea.
And this is, what do they call it? What is this superbug called? NDM1? Oh, it's just a new gene.
Yeah, that's the marker on the bug.
Gotcha, okay. And, yeah, spreading. Medical tourism is a big source of foreign commerce in India, as people go there for transplants that they can't legally get in their home countries.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it's a form of staph, and it's just resistant to everything. You've heard of MRSA. It's methylene-resistant staphylococcus aureus. So this is everything resistant Staphylococcus aureus.
Okay,
MRSA.
Yeah, it's worse than MRSA.
It's worse than MRSA, sadly.
Huh. Well, speaking of illnesses, kind of an odd story from Maryland this afternoon as we record this on October 7th of 2010. About three dozen people taken ill at a rally for President Obama in Bowie, Maryland.
That's really strange.
It is. It may not be
was
that
there
mysterious.
Something in the air, or something food they ate, or
well,
just what they heard.
Yeah, that was an easy one. President Obama was speaking at Bowie State University in Maryland, and about three dozen people took ill. Local fire and EMS spokesman says he thinks it might just be the weather. It was warm there today. People were packed in shoulder to shoulder, and a few people began to faint. Couple people taken to the hospital, most of the rest treated at the scene. So the president there at a rally for incumbent Governor Martin O'Malley leading up to the elections in November. Things are really getting weird for Democrats out there. There was a story that popped up today, speaking of politics. President Obama apparently going to use a pocket veto to kill a bill that sailed through the House of Representatives on a voice vote. I mean, just went through committee unopposed, passed by the House, Senate passed it without any debate. And as it reached the president's desk, somebody, and I have not dug into the story far enough to figure out who raised the alarm, but somebody pointed out, hey, this bill would make it a lot easier for those banks to start foreclosing on people. You know, these banks like Bank of America and Citicorp, and, you know, that have had to stop, or Chase rather, that have had to stop foreclosing because
in many states, they've been told by the courts that they have to.
Right. And title insurance companies aren't writing policies on houses that they foreclosed on because they can't show a clear title.
Right.
They can't show that they actually hold the title to the house. Well, somebody pointed out this bill would apparently make it a lot easier for these banks to document ownership and to foreclose. Now, the bill was proposed by a U.S. representative from Alabama, a Republican. He's been pushing to get this bill out of committee since 2005. Suddenly, in 2010, it sails out of committee. He said, you know, he was quoted in the story as saying he was even surprised how quickly it made it to a vote. But the bill was only intended to make it easier for documents to be accepted legally, accepted in court proceedings or whatever, when they'd been notarized out of state. And apparently, he first proposed the bill in 2005 after hearing complaints from a court stenographer that other states weren't accepting documents notarized in Alabama. So he proposed it, stonewalled until 2010. Suddenly it sails through, passes, gets to the president's desk, and then somebody says, hey, wait a minute, what this bill really does is makes it easier for banks to foreclose houses they don't really own. Surprise. And the funny
thing, 2005, the banks didn't need it. I mean,
that's exactly right. They didn't need it in 2005.
No. But they need it now. But you were talking, you talked earlier about the pocket veto. And
right.
You know, I had to ask him. I had to ask you in the car, what is a pocket veto? And I'm betting most of you people know, so forgive me, but I'm going to ask you again.
Well,
can you explain it?
Essentially, the pocket veto is just a maneuver by which the president just doesn't do anything with a bill. He essentially, you know, figuratively sticks it in his pocket and doesn't sign it.
And I asked you, how long can it stay in his pocket?
Yeah. Well, according to the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 7, if any bill shall not be returned by the president within 10 days, Sundays excepted, after it shall have been presented to him, the same shall be a law in like manner as if he had signed it, unless the Congress by their adjournment prevent its return, in which case it shall not be a law. So if Congress if Congress is not in session, okay, they pass it and then they go on recess like they are now to go campaign. He can just not sign it.
And it still becomes law.
No, it dies.
Oh, can you read that again?
Okay. If any bill shall not be returned by the president within 10 days, Sundays excepted, after it shall have been presented to him, the same shall be a law in like manner as if he had signed it, unless the Congress by their adjournment prevent its return, in which case it shall not be a law. So if Congress passes the bill and then adjourns, which they've done, the president can just let the bill die by not signing it. He doesn't actually have to veto the bill. It's called a pocket veto.
Well, you know, the Constitution is a living document.
So today, this is still
just
a bill
sounds political
on
to me.
Capitol
Hill.
It really is. And the Democrats have kind of an awkward position here because the bill, even though it was proposed by a Republican, languished in committee for, 4 years, 5 years, whatever, and suddenly it zooms through without debate. Passes on a voice vote.
But if Congress comes back into session and they decide, you know what, the way we've read this and all of our lawyers have taken a look at it, and looks to me like this became a law, there's this fudge factor that happened, while we were adjourned, but still it actually became a law because that's how we see it. And we're going to say that and the election has already happened. Then they will take a look at that and say, those Republicans were responsible for that. And then the Democrats, because the election has already happened, will say, it's true, they really are responsible for that, and we were just sort of hands across the aisle.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because that would be
outrageous things.
A year ago,
that don't even have to be debated anymore.
Well, a year ago I would have said that can't happen because that is just so blatantly unconstitutional that it could never happen. But we've seen the Congress deem the 2011 budget passed without passing a budget, and that's not constitutional. We no longer live in the United States under the Constitution.
No wonder people get sick.
Yeah. So there's that.
And if you get sick.
Yep.
This is a segue. If you get sick, there's a news story out today that says you might just have your vaccine right there ready for you. If indeed some sort of new emerging
super bug
turns up and we suddenly need a vaccine fast.
And now, why has this always been a problem in the past? When some new strain of flu comes out, why does it always take so long to get a new vaccine
to market?
Well,
it's a new enemy, and you don't know what causes it to infect the person. You have to actually go in and figure out what proteins are the problem. You have to figure out where the genus is on that, how to attack it, and formulate some sort of a response, a vaccine. And it's usually done with an attenuated virus or a dead virus. And you have to grow those. It takes time. It takes months.
And they've been growing them inside of eggs.
Yeah. Usually.
So what now? How? What is this new process?
Well, the new thing is called in silica. It's not in a petri dish or anything. It's actually on a computer. So what this new company, and the headline is Novartis teams with newly established synthetic genomics vaccines to develop flu seed virus banks.
I see. Synthetic genomics is the name of the company. Synthetic genomics.
Synthetic genomics vaccines. Because synthetic genomics is a different company.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Yeah, okay. And synthetic genomics and
this. Because I had to look it up. Synthetic genomics has been around since about 2005. Synthetic genomics vaccines is brand new. And it suddenly became a company right after all of this funding came its way.
And the reason this is significant is that the new company, Synthetic Genomics Vaccines, is a partnership between Synthetic Genomics and J. Craig Venter, the guy who claims to have invented the first self-replicating synthetic
genomics has several singularity guys on the board.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Very interesting. What is that? No, is that Sam chewing a chew stick?
That's Sam's chewing the chew stick.
Oh, I thought somebody was tunneling into the bunker.
Oh, look, it's Sun Myung Moon.
All your base belong to us.
You know, that reminds me that what's going on with North Korea. It's they're just sort of jumping out there again. I know that this has nothing to do with synthetic genomics, and we'll get back to that in a second. But it's like he's popping up again. I'm significant, and so he's back in the news today. And they're talking about what's going on in North Korea because he just appointed his youngest son and his, you know, his aunt or something like that, or his second cousin or his dog. I don't know. He appointed him to various positions as if he's, you know, getting ready to die.
Well, he's been around for a while.
Well, here's the thing. Honestly, if he dies and it's his youngest son, I don't know how young the youngest son is, but, you know, this is a nuclear country.
Yeah.
And what if they suddenly have a coup d'etat?
Well, I don't know enough about the politics of North Korea.
Neither do I. I'm asking a question.
Yeah, don't know. How many people does he have in the family? The Chinese not likely to allow anything too bad to happen there. Looks like he's got three sons, Kim Jong-nam, Kim Jong-chul, and Kim Jong-un. And of course, in the Asian custom, Kim is actually the surname.
Name.
The
yeah.
surname, yeah. You know, Jong Nam, Jong Chul, and Jong Un, the sons of Jong Il. So, I don't know. I know that in my period of expertise, let's relate this to something I've actually studied. It's sort of like looking for the keys under the lamp, even though that's not where you dropped them because the light's better. I know that one of the things that kept post Roman Britain in such turmoil. You know, the age of King Arthur and then, the years that followed. The thing that was so bad about living as a Briton in the 6th century is that when a regional king died, they had the habit of splitting up. And the Franks saw this in Europe, too, when, you know, Clovis, who first unified the Frankish kingdom. They had a habit, a tradition of splitting the kingdom between the sons.
Primogeniture.
Yes, exactly. So you'd wind up, you know, you got a really powerful king like Clovis, and he would divide the kingdom three ways. Well, you know, in the Celtic countries, they would often have, you know, 7, 8, 9 sons who would split up the kingdom. And the one who wound up with inheriting the kingdom was the one who was ruthless enough to hack his way to power through his brothers and cousins. So,
which you know well if you've ever seen The Lion in Winter.
Yes. So who knows? Let's just hope that they don't try to do that with nuclear power in North Korea. But
no,
anyway, just a couple
anyways,
of minutes left. So the significance of this synthetic genomics vaccine.
Well, I think it's because Venter is, he's part of the singularity thing. I mean, they essentially want to move to the movie that I talked about earlier. They want to move to a combination of human intelligence and make it super intelligent by, you know, turning us into the Borg.
Yeah, and he's essentially one of the scientists.
Yeah, so he's going to be creating vaccines for us. This guy who wants to turn us into the Borg
out of synthetic
exactly.
A synthetic genome. Essentially, they are creating synthetic nucleic acids.
Well, we don't know for sure that the vaccines will be made with synthetic nucleic acids, Possibly. But they're definitely doing it in silico, which means that they're synthesizing things synthetically.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going to play devil's advocate here. But I'll do more research and I'll find out if I can, because their website doesn't tell you much. I went there. Doesn't tell you a whole
Well,
lot.
The name would seem to indicate that
wouldn't it?
Synthetic that, genomics synthetic, vaccines.
Exactly. It does sound like synthetic nucleic acids, which if you were in Canton, Ohio, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah. The scientists are trying to create their own dirt.
They are. One more thing. I do have to mention that Ahmadinejad is going to be going to Lebanon.
Right.
And he arrives there on October 13th.
Uh-huh.
And in advance, his Republican Guard has been storming the country mm-hmm. and essentially making South Lebanon their territory.
Right. And this ties into what Debka File was reporting the last couple of days, that Syria and Iran have essentially decided to take over Lebanon as soon as Ahmadinejad leaves the country next week on the 14th. So keep your eyes on that. You know we will. We'll have more on the synthetic genomics vaccine
Sam has finished his chew stick.
Which means it's about time for us to go.
He just stopped and turned and looked over his shoulder like, that's enough, Mom. Shut up now.
30 minutes have gone by. You've used up your allotment for today. Coming up this weekend, we're going to talk with Guy Malone. We'll just tease that again tomorrow mm-hmm. night. That's Friday night, October 8th at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, blogtalkradio.com/PID radio. It's View from the Bunker Live. Guy will talk about why they've moved across country. We pray that they've actually reached their destination now, that the transmission has been fixed, and they have enough money to live on for the short term.
That is so true. And then also on Sunday evening, your on-demand-only show of View from the Bunker is going to be with our pastor and his wife, and mm-hmm. they're going to be on the Land family. They're yep. going to be on talking about their plan to adopt the Ukrainian orphans,
yes.
and we thank you very much for those of you who had helped them out.
Yes, because it's not an inexpensive proposition.
No, it isn't.
Bringing three special needs children, yes, getting international cooperation, and just the travel to get back and forth. But we'll talk with them about why they want to do this, and that'll be on Sunday. And until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. And living in the past.